All right, thank you very much, Ken. And hello, everyone. It's good to be here with you for Gentle Healing, the new reduced 1 hour Gentle Healing. Before we were 2 hours, now we're 1 hour. So obviously, things are going to be different. What I plan to do with this 1 hour is for the first half hour, let you all share. And then for the second half hour, I will share. Oh, yeah, Lynn says I sound a little better than I did Sunday. I feel better than I did Sunday, too. Yeah. I'm also not going to play a song at the beginning of Gentle Healing anymore, just because, again, we don't have that much time. And when I would read the write-ins, I may not read as many write-ins as I usually do, and I might not read a whole write-in. I might read just a portion of what somebody sent that seemed particularly important. And again, all of that because we don't have as much time. So, what I will do to get us started, since I'm not playing a song, is I will start by sharing from one of the write-ins. And then we'll see if someone in the sanctuary is ready to share next. How does that sound? So the first one I'm going to look at is from Kate. Kate just recently, I want to say she I think she kind of well, she's a new grandmother. Let's put it that way. She's a new grandmother. It's her son's son, and his name is Seamus. And she was looking at Revelation chapter 1, where we're asked not to see anything in the world as special. And she's commenting, of course, that Seamus seems very special. And so she asked the inner teacher to help her look at this. And again, I'll just read portions of it, not all of it. But this is what the inner teacher said. Love, Seamus. Do not deny your feelings of love for him, but remember his reality, which is the same as your own, the same as all. We are awareness. We are one. And then I'm skipping down a little bit, and inner wisdom says, let's face this together. You will be forgotten. Seamus's grandchildren, if there are any, may not even know your name. Does that change anything? Does that change who you are or who they are? It has no effect at all. Seamus is a reflection of you, and now there's a capital Y here. Seamus is a reflection of you. Not of Kate, not some genetic copy or imprint. So I really love the way Kate's inner guidance helped her to feel comfortable loving. The ego might say that we shouldn't love. There's something wrong with I shouldn't love my grandson. No, of course, you can feel comfortable with loving. But as you're loving, notice the reality, notice the life awareness. And life awareness is very easy to see, I think, in babies, so that's a great opportunity to look at life awareness. But also notice the life awareness in the adults, and the life awareness in the animals, and notice the life awareness in the insects, right? And just feel free to love it all. I'm going to let go of the mic for just a second so that I can expand this little window that will allow me to see when you have your hands up. All right. I don't know if that worked. We'll find out. I don't see. I remember and not too long ago, I didn't have the little window, and right now I don't have the little window. Hopefully it will appear, otherwise I won't know when anybody's hand is up. But maybe somebody can help me by telling me when there's a hand up. Is there someone in the sanctuary who would like to share? This was kind of an unusual break because we had about three tips, I think, and then 2 weeks off, and then the final four. All right, Jacqueline, she doesn't share much during gentle healing. The mic is yours.
Hey, everybody. I don't share much, but I wrote this soon after the Italy pilgrimage, and it has had a real impact, as did the Italy pilgrimage. It has had a real impact on me this week. So it's in regard to Monday's thought of awakening. I'll read that first. Silence is the state of being. It is not fleeting. It is permanent, constant, now. When one is not listening to I, one is not aware of silence, of peace. When one listens to I, silence guides all actions clearly. One listening to I may act in a state of grace, with a smile in the heart, because one listening to I knows he follows all for the highest good. And so I asked, what does it mean to act in a state of grace? How can I be sure that I am acting in a state of grace and not acting out of self-will? In the response, your intention to act in the best interest of all is that which guides you. This is your beacon, your signpost, and your way stop. You can see that the thinking mind would co-opt the peace you find in surrendering yourself to the service of the One. Let that be. Pardon me. Remember, the way to peace is found only in the heart of the journey. Neither the destination nor its means needs to be focused on by you. Your focus is the heart or the plot of the story of love that is told. Be with me in all that you do. See where you are tempted to resolve unresolved problems. Let those things be. When asked to perform an action in the world, ask me whether you are to do anything and what you should do. You need not look ahead to see potential pitfalls. Remember to focus on your heart. As we discussed yesterday, your focus is on the interconnectedness of all things. Okay, so I've started that, and I realized that I am reading one that I did not want to read. I apologize for that. I do want to back up. I know time is limited here, so I'll try not to be long about it. So let me try again. I won't read you the thought of awakening from the day it was on, which was on that Sunday. But it spoke about not seeing others. So I asked, again, apologies. I asked, what does it mean to not see others? What is the eye of knowledge? The eye of knowledge is that which knows the truth of existence. That truth is that there is only the one consciousness, the one being. To see others is to look to and believe in the appearance of many. To focus on the faults of others is to look for proof of that which isn't true. If your focus is there, you will continue to find proof of the untrue. To see the unworthiness or unwillingness of others is to continue to focus on your own unworthiness and unwillingness. I asked, how do I remove my focus from seeming others and place it on the truth of existence? Neat response. It is like going to a movie. Do you focus on the backdrop, the lighting, the unlikeliness of the events that occur on the screen? If so, you miss the richness of that experience. You miss the point of the movie. You remain the judge of what is occurring without actually attempting to explore the message that is being conveyed. To focus on the oneness or the truth of the message conveyed, you must allow yourself to see beyond the happenings on the screen. You root for the characters, hoping they achieve what they attempt, hoping that they are redeemed by the love that connects them and makes the story one of love, of hope, of redemption. You are asked to do no more here. You know how to do this. The only thing that is lacking is your willingness. Your willingness is reflected in your focus. Soften your eyes. Learn to be forgiving of the flaws in the script. Learn to hope for the redemption of the characters. Root for them. By shifting your focus in this way, you let go of the eye that sits back and judges the story. The world disappears and is replaced by the dance of the story of love. What a glorious place to live from. This seat contains the perspective of love, of hope, of renewal. Whoever could be offended or irritated or put off in any way in such a seat of awareness? Only that which does not exist in the play of existence. That which does not exist is this I that you have pretended to be. It is this I whose perspective keeps you from seeing the story of the truth of our oneness. It is this I who prevents you from letting go your disbelief. It is this I who you pretend to be which keeps you from the realization of the I that you are, that we all are. Yes, it turns out that you've been rooting for the wrong team. It is this I that refuses to see the possibility of redemption. It is this I that refuses to believe in happy endings, in redemption, in interconnectivity, in the love of the one. Surprised? This is a good sign. Look for the hope. Look for the unexpected. Look for the storylines that reveal the true plot to you. It is here that you will find the overarching themes that reveal the beauty of the story of us all. there's more on that day, but I will wait and share that in my sharing tomorrow so that I don't take up everyone's time. So, yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Jay says he hopes that one winds up in the book. So I guess you need to dog ear that one for when we put out the call to send in your best ones. But thank you very much, Jacqueline. Yeah, it was really nice to hear you share in gentle healing. Maybe that half hour break gives you the opportunity to rest up from speaking and be ready to speak some more. Okay, Jay, I see your hand is up. I did find my little box, so now I can see when your hands are up. The mic is yours.
Yeah, that was great, Jacqueline. Thanks for that. That was nice. This was from a few weeks past, 253, talking about the true I rests within the stillness deep. The true I lives and breathes in God, as God, known, stillness in truth. Non-stillness is distraction or reflection. In reflection, there is peace. In distraction, there is looking for what seems not to be, yet it exists. A mere whisper, be still and know. In my contemplation, let in spirit into the mind, and my perception will be changed to see truth, not problems, to look within rather than react, to give notice and extend love rather than to expect notice and want love. As the heart is in a receptive state, if the mind too As the heart is in a receptive state, the mind too is open and ready to trust. For where the heart is, the mind shall be too. Do not fear hurt, as this is imaginary. Be still and know that all is okay, and let all pain fall away, knowing that love is supreme, and only an illusion can be hurt, which is not real. Your being as God is sure, and it is infinite, and as infinite source, the flow of love has no end. Only the fears of imaginings can stop the awareness of the flow. Even so, the flow continues all the same, even in the unconsciousness of the mind. Stillness opens your eyes to that flow and the trust that is infinite. So that was coming to me just the other day, and I wanted to share that with the group. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jay. Your sharing was also very good. I couldn't help but think while you were sharing about when we were in Italy, you lost your journal. And I know there were some writings in your journal that were pretty good, and you lost those. And I remember you saying that was the one thing you didn't want to lose. But yeah. yeah, I had to let that go. Yeah. Thank you. Who else would like to share? Suffer versus peace. Those are your choices, huh? Yeah, you could suffer over the fact that you lost your journal, or let it go and be at peace. Tell you what, let me share another write-in. This is from Teresa, who was also on the Italy pilgrimage with us. She says, inner wisdom, there are feelings of disappointment arising within me that I appear to be going backwards on my spiritual journey. My evidence for this is that I still cannot feel the God within me, and there are a lot of jumbled emotions of hopelessness and fear. I know this is the unhealed places in my mind emerging so that they can be seen and healed. I need your help and guidance. And inner wisdom answers, my darling child, I know how painful these feelings can be. Your heightened experiences while on the pilgrimage have allowed another opening through which healing can occur. Like sand in a jar of water, your soul and psyche have been all shook up. This disturbance is good, although it does not feel like this to you. Now is the time for trust. You know how to be with these feelings in order to allow them to pass through. Keep practicing that. Lean back into my strength. When you do this, you not only allow your own healing, but also contribute to the healing of all your brothers. Isn't that a beautiful motivation to stand firm and refuse to allow yourself to collapse into feelings of unworthiness? And it goes on from there. But as I said, you know, for time's sake, I'll just read portions of this. But one of the things I told Teresa when I responded to her email was that whenever we go on a pilgrimage, assuming we don't let it deteriorate into a vacation, assuming we hold on to the contemplation while we're on the pilgrimage, whenever we go on a pilgrimage and we come back, we're not the same as when we went. We change. In fact, a word of warning to Jacqueline. you know, you might find that some of the ideas that I had before we went on the pilgrimage, when we start discussing, you know, some of the things about the retreat house, you might find that some of them have changed. And again, that's because I was holding on to a contemplation, not only the entire time that I was in Italy, but I've actually been holding on to the same contemplation since I've been home. And so as a result to holding on to a contemplation for such a lengthy time, something in you shifts, something in you changes. That's the advantage of pilgrimage. And so, it's not surprising that a crack, you know, a crack would appear in Teresa, and that these emotions, which we call negative emotions, would be arising. But she's doing exactly the perfect thing by practicing in the way she is, just allowing the feelings to pass through, and leaning in on the strength of truth. So great job. Great job, Teresa. And congratulations. But Jay says he felt a shift also. He has a greater motive or motivation for practice. Good. Is there someone else in the sanctuary who would like to share? All right, tell you what, let me go on. You know, it's interesting because Tree says, writing from inner wisdom said, lean back into my strength. And I have a writing from Joanne where she actually asked inner wisdom, how do I lean on your strength? So again, I'm just going to read a portion of this. But here's the portion I want to read. You lean on my strength by putting your attention on awareness, consciousness, existence. That is where you find a calmness, peace, love, and joy. That is my strength. And you know, that's a perfect answer, you know, and especially when, well, really all of the time, but especially when we're going through stuff, you know, like Teresa is right now. If while emotions are rising and while the mind is spinning, if we can place our attention with awareness, consciousness, existence, in whatever way we can, and if we place our attention there, it enables us to just be, which is really abiding as our true self. It allows us to just be while the mind is spinning and while the emotions are coming up. And as we just be, we abide as ourself in those situations, we heal. We heal. So it's interesting because, you know, we might have different ideas about what strength is. You know, we might think of strength as like gritting my teeth and getting through this, right? But that isn't really the strength. The strength is exactly what Joanne's inner guidance has spoken of. It's being able just to be with that awareness, be with that consciousness, be with that sense of existence, and letting whatever is going on in the body and mind just kind of wear itself out without us getting involved. Now, is there someone in the sanctuary who would like to share? All right, Shauna, the mic is yours.
Good evening, everyone. I wanted to share from Monday's Thoughts of Awakening, which Jacqueline read. Thank you, Jacqueline. I don't have to read that thought. And I wanted to set it up a little bit before my contemplation. I was I'm pet sitting, so I'm using these 3 weeks of pet sitting in retreat by myself out in the end of a long road out in the country, just beautiful. So while you guys were gone, I was in retreat, and all kinds of teachers and teachings came in to support my retreat, which is just fabulous. So I wanted to start with, I asked Holy Spirit a similar question actually to you, Jacqueline. I said, Holy Spirit, what would you share with me to help me listen to you and remain in the state of grace that is silence? And I heard, continue to see your personal preferences and willingly let them go. You were given a beautiful example to follow in Michael Singer's book, The Surrender Experiment. Use this example as inspiration. The repetition in the book that you became annoyed with is helpful to train your mind. Continue to explore your relationship with food. Eating less and fasting is very beneficial to help you directly see how strong your desires are and how they distract you from practice. Imagine what your desire for awakening would be like if you turned this over to me. Let me show you what freedom is, and only you can choose to do this. It's an act of surrender. I can't do it for you. It is time. And then I did some contemplation and root cause inquiry about food, but I won't go into that right now. But during the Regina's tip, You gave us an assignment to reading about the symbols in the Bible of Revelation, and you asked what our method of determining what the symbols would mean, and mine was to go into meditation, clear all the intellectual thinking, and ask for guidance about that, about what the symbols mean to me. And also in that tip was the steps that gave you interpreted the reading, these steps. So step back, detach, look at the whole as it is, and then feel within for guidance. So I did that, and this assignment made me feel very aware of how the ego mind jumps immediately to judgment and blame. That was the intellectual way that I interpret events. But because this awareness was heightened, I was able to follow the steps given, and they worked for me in most situations. Some of the beliefs that I have heavily reinforced took much more effort and determination, but it also increased my motivation and desire. Like you said, Jay, there was a shift. So increasing the desire and being in quiet really helps increase that desire. So it's so exciting to notice the shift, as subtle as it is, and then ask myself, do I want chaos or do I want this peace? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Shauna, and thank you for sharing your experience of that little exercise. Revelation is going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be very different than our study of the rest of NTI because it is more like a workbook. It has little exercises in it as we go through. But I'll talk more about that in a moment. It's not my half hour yet. It's still your half hour. Is there someone else who would like to share? All right, let me share from Lene then. Lene said, demonstrate to me who I truly am so that this knowledge will lead all of my choices. And this is what inner wisdom said. Listen to how beautiful this is. I show up in all that you see. I am the new flower blooming and the nearly dead leaf falling from the tree. I am the sunrise bringing light and the sunset bringing darkness. I am the wave in the ocean that froths upon the shoreline, and the wave so enormous destroys cities. I am the flame that keeps you warm, as well as the flame that devours material possessions. I am the wind that carries clouds, and the wind that levels dreams. I exist within everything, whether perceived as good or bad. This too is your same existence in everything. These are not choices that change your existence, only your awareness of it. Be reminded of this existence always, and you shall know what you choose. So thank you, Lene. That was beautiful. I really liked that. I thought it was very poetic. Maybe that's one that you should dog ear for when we put out the call. All right, so it's 7 o'clock. That means it's my turn. So let me get a drink of water and cough. For those of you who don't know, we were passing a cold around on the trip, and I managed to go the whole trip without getting the cold. Other people were sick for a day here or there, but I was healthy the entire trip. The cold, I started feeling the cold the night before we left. Yeah, the evening gathering before we left, I started getting the chills. And interestingly, it hit me, as far as I know, harder than it hit anyone. I was actually quite sick on Saturday and Sunday after we were home. So I was not sick really at all on the trip, but once I got home, I was pretty sick. And I told Jacqueline today my theory. She said maybe I got a different strain since I was sicker than anybody else. I said my theory was that it hit me just before the flight home, which is when I went 24 hours without sleep. So maybe there was like a weakened immune system. But the truth is, we don't know whether it was a different strain or whether it was because I was not sleeping. But I got hit pretty hard. I feel pretty good now. You can still hear it, but I feel good. For 2 days, I wasn't well. I could only, do something for 20 or 30 minutes, and then I'd have to lay down for an hour. So I get a lot of rest. All right, so sharing from the tips. Again, it's kind of interesting. When I went to review the tips today, getting ready for gentle healing, it was like, oh my goodness, these first three tips seem so long ago. And of course, they were long ago. They were, 2 weeks ago. Plus, in between, I did a whole nother contemplation, right? So it makes these tips seem very, very long ago. But we did start with tip 267, which was the tip based on 3rd John. And that tip shared some signs that we are awakening to consciousness. And in fact, I'm going to open that up and we can just kind of review those signs now because it's been a while. So when you see this kind of stuff naturally happening within you, you know that you are awakening. Let's see, it's 267. Okay, so here was the first sign. When you begin to naturally care about others as much as you care about yourself, even if you've never met them before. The ego is naturally selfish, and the ego puts me above anyone else. That's what the ego does. When you start to awaken to consciousness, which we lately through the thoughts of awakening have been calling I, when you start to awaken to I, this isn't intellectual. It isn't thinking, right? There's something in you that isn't thinking that begins to really recognize that I in everyone. And because it recognizes that I in everyone, you start to treat everyone as important as yourself, right? So it's kind of funny. It's like the ego and the truth have something in common. The ego and the truth have something in common. That something is, I am important. The difference is, what's the I? Right, to the ego, it's just this body, mind, personality. I am important. But to spirit, to truth, that I is everyone and everything. So I am important is everyone, everything is important. And so you start treating people differently. And again, you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to be really nice to this guy. Just some person comes up to you that you've never met before. Starts to express some kind of a problem or something to you, and you are genuinely concerned and genuinely want to help, as if it's your problem, your concern. And again, this happens very, very naturally. It's because I am important. That's a true statement, but I has shifted. Also, you happily put yourself aside without any sense of sacrifice in order to accommodate someone else's needs, interestingly perceived or real. Because as you begin to awaken, in spite of what many people say, although you understand the awakeness of everyone, that doesn't mean everyone around you awakens too. In fact, most of the people around you will still be very asleep, very caught up in their ego, very unconscious, very lost in their heads. And so what that means is a lot of the time their perceived need is something they could just let go of. It's not a need, it's not a genuine need. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter because, you know, I am so important, and the I has shifted. I am so important that if my brother comes to me with a perceived need that isn't even a real need, you know, if there's any way that I can assist my brother with this perceived need, I happily put my own self aside. You know, whatever I was about to do, I drop, you know, or whatever, and I give my attention to my brother and I help him. And again, this isn't thinking. It's not a decision. It's not like there's a thought, oh, you know, I'm going to be spiritual here. I'm going to put myself aside. I'm going to help my brother. It's just a natural reflex. And so when you start seeing that natural reflex where you're happily putting yourself aside in order to accommodate someone else's needs, perceived or real, you know that you are awakening to consciousness. Another one, you prefer to take on a responsibility that you know you can manage yourself than to pass it to another if the other would perceive it as a burden. Right? So if you can tell that something would burden another person, or at least they would perceive it as a burden, and you can manage it easily by yourself, you find yourself just taking those things on. Now, there's some qualifiers there. One is if you can manage it easily by yourself. You know, there are some things that you can't and that you need help. And when you do, you will just as happily ask for help. There might even be some things you can't do at all. You know, you don't have the skill or whatever, and you very happily will say, well, I don't know how to do that. But if it is something that you can manage on yourself, you'll find that you would rather do it yourself than to give it to someone else if they would perceive that as a burden. And again, it's very natural. Also, you are willing to do things someone else's way, as long as the effect of that decision is in harmony with intuition's guidance. You actually, you know, you still have ideas on how to do things, right? I mean, the human mind remains the human mind. So you'll have an idea, someone else will have an idea, but you'll find yourself dropping your ideas much quickly, much more quickly, much more easily, and being willing just to do it the other person's way. It's not important to you anymore. Things are done your way. Again, there is an exception, and the exception is, the way I word it, is when it's important, when it matters. You know, if someone is about to do something and I know, for example, that it's going to harm them in some way or harm someone in some way, you know, and I can see that, you know, I'll press a little harder for my way, not because it's my way, but because it's gonna avoid that unnecessary pain, right? and so when it's important, you know, I'm still willing to go ahead and press a little harder. But otherwise, I just drop it, just drop it, just drop it. Even when I know others are wrong, it's kind of funny. When I really know they're wrong, but they're sure that they're right, I'll still go ahead and do it their way if it doesn't really matter. You know, so what? They'll learn they're wrong by doing it their way. They'll find out they were wrong and learn. So yeah, dropping my way and being willing to do it others' ways, as long as it's in harmony with intuition's guidance, that's a sign that you're awakening to consciousness. Also, you recognize others as yourself, and you greet them with great joy and familiarity. And again, this is even if you don't know them, you never met them before, but there's this there's this familiarity that you can't quite explain. Again, it's not an intellectual thing. Intellectually, you know you've never met this person before, but the heart is just so overjoyed to see I in this other form, in this other body, and that joy just can really express itself. And I made a comment that sometimes you have to tone it down a bit, because sometimes that freaks other people out, you know. So you learn that, you know, you learn when to kind of hold it back and not act as excited as you are, as happy as you are. But it's just a natural joy of I recognizing I. right? And it kind of comes through in unexpected times. It will even surprise you. That's when you know you're awakening to consciousness. Also, others will begin to tell you that they feel more at ease, or they feel happier when they're around you or after talking to you. Now, this doesn't mean everybody, because certainly people can be very caught up in their own heads and their own judgments, and they might not like you at all. But there will be more people than before expressing that they feel better or more at ease or more relaxed when they're around you or after talking to you. And that's also a sign that you're awakening to consciousness. And I think probably the reason 3rd John put some of this information in NTI is because, of course, the mind is always telling us, if we listen to it, the mind is always telling us that we aren't progressing, or we aren't progressing fast enough. And so Third John is just saying, hey, when you see this happening spontaneously, you know that you are awakening. And so it's nice to kind of have these little signposts that we can watch out for. And by the way, some of these things will happen off and on. Like it doesn't like this last one, which is about or not the last one, the second to last one, where you recognize others and greet them with great joy and familiarity. Sometimes that will happen, and sometimes that won't happen. But the fact that it's even happening sometimes, spontaneously and unexpectedly, is a sign that you're awakening. So don't judge yourself for the fact that it doesn't happen all the time. If it happens at all, awakening is occurring, because that's the I recognizing the I. And once upon a time, you didn't used to have this unexpected joy at passing a stranger on the street, right? So the fact that it's starting to happen sometimes means you are awakening. 268, tip 268, that day we were looking at Jude, and I mentioned that this tip is not talking to an individual, or sorry, that Jude is not talking to an individual. It's not talking to Bill or to Sally or anyone else. It's talking to consciousness, which misperceives itself as Bill and as Sally. I mean, for time's sake, I'm not going to sit here and read all of the names in the room. I'll just read a few. But consciousness thinks it is Dove and Shauna and Ken and Jay and Maggie and Jacqueline and etc. It's one consciousness. And yet at the same time, it thinks it is each of us, right? So it doesn't matter which of us is reading NTI Jude. It is speaking into the mind of consciousness. Jude is speaking to that one consciousness. And NTI Jude is really telling us the world is a reflection of our believing attention. I'm using the word our because it's kind of funny with words. But the our in that, our, the our in that is the I, right? It's the one consciousness. We're one consciousness appearing as many. And our believing attention, or the believing attention of I, that believing attention is what causes the world to appear as it appears. And it's really explaining that. And it's telling us that there's nothing at all in the world that is out of whack or gone wrong, because even the worst appearance in the world is a perfect reflection of the believing attention. And so what do we do with that? When we look at the world and we see these things that we are tempted to judge as bad, we don't want to go that far. We don't want to go in to judge it as bad. We don't want to go into carrying on and on and on about how it should be different. By the way, this applies to politics too, right? Instead, We want to realize that everything that we're looking at is coming from our believing attention. And we want to be a lot more careful about how we use our believing attention. We want to spend more time placing our believing attention on contemplation of the daily thought, the daily tip, or something else that's inspired you. Spend a lot more time paying attention to inner intuition, a lot more time paying attention to awareness, existence, instead of paying attention to what's wrong with me, what's wrong with my job, what's wrong with the world. Because I, and when I say I mean all of us, I am consciousness, and I am creating through my believing attention. And so it's really important that I take responsibility for my believing attention. And again, when I say I mean all of us. That took us to day 269, where we looked at Revelation chapter 1, which, as I mentioned, is one of my favorite chapters in all of NTI. I don't know how many times I quote Revelation 1 when I'm teaching something else. It always seems to remind me of something in Revelation 1. But what Revelation 1 does in just a page and a half is it helps us become aware of common pitfalls on the spiritual path. You know, there are a lot of people on the spiritual path who are not going to awaken. And it's because of these common pitfalls. It's because they get caught here or they get caught there. And so it's really helpful to be aware of these common pitfalls so that when we see ourselves starting to get caught, we can recognize them for what they are, let go, and move on. So some of the common pitfalls: idolizing. You know, when we went to Italy recently, obviously one of the people that we were contemplating very deeply was St. Francis. The very first place they took us was the St. Francis Basilica in Assisi, or the first place they took us in Assisi. And this is a humongous church that idolizes St. Francis. You know, and in fact, when I went to China with Jasmine after she graduated high school, we went into Buddhist temples and we went into Taoist temples, and we found people idolizing Buddha and idolizing Lao Tzu. And when we idolize these people, turn them into gods or near gods, they're above us and we're less than, and we cannot achieve what they have achieved. You know, it's just such a perfect ego trip. Also, when we idolize something, like we can idolize something like miracles or idolize, you know, any scripture. And when we idolize something, we tend to think it is right, and anything else that appears different in any way is wrong. And that keeps us very, very stuck as well. So idolizing is a big trap. Another big trap is the spiritual ego. That's me, the spiritual person. I'm so spiritual. I wear crystals. I, you know, listen only to spiritual music. I'm a vegetarian, you know, but I'm all happy and proud about my spirituality, the spiritual me. You know, that's another really big trap on the spiritual path. I'm sure you guys are well aware of that. Another one is using spirituality or attempting to use spirituality in order to attract the things that will make me happier in the world, right? And that's another big trap. Of course, that very much holds on to the me. Another trap is believing that some images are more spiritual than other images. For example, health is more spiritual than sickness. You know, I sit here now with a cold, and I mentioned that the cold hit me harder than anyone else. Does that mean I'm less spiritual than everyone else on that trip? Of course not. But you know, some people would think, yeah, there must be something wrong with Regina. She got the cold the hardest. You know, but there's just no truth to that. In fact, as I've been contemplating the life of Saint Francis after his most dramatic awakening experience, his health started going downhill really, really fast. Within a couple years, he died after his most significant awakening experience. So ideas that there are certain appearances that are more special, you know, like health is more special than not health, or having people like me is more special than having people not like me. All of that kind of stuff will keep you stuck because you're going to keep looking outward to see if all the good stuff is coming into your life, right? So you keep your attention outward. Basically, NTI Revelation 1 said is what you really need to do is just remember your purpose, you know, your desire to awaken, however you word that, your spiritual aspiration. Just remember your purpose and keep it close, right? Keep it foremost in your mind. And everything you need for discernment and guidance will be given. If you remember your purpose, if you stay very, very true to your purpose, as soon as you start to slip for one of these pitfalls, something in you will see it. And the reason you'll see it is because you hold the purpose to awaken or the purpose to realize truth so close to your breast. Right? That will wake you up anytime you begin to slip. You'll begin to see your slipping before you slip too far, and you'll be able to step back out again before you fall into the pitfall. 269 was the last tip we looked at before the 2 week break. So when we came back, the first one we looked at was 270, so this one was much closer and may seem much more familiar. So, oh no, not this one. This is the one Shauna talked about. She talked about the next one. So, 270 told us how to be with ego. And this is really important. This is really important because, you know, until the ego's dead, the ego shows up. And we need to learn how to be with the ego in me, right? So that it's healing rather than ego energizing. So what NTI Revelation 2 said is, first of all, see the ego as confusion. Seeing it as confusion is much different as seeing it as bad, as evil, as vicious, as fearful, right? Lots of people see the ego in that way. And when you see the ego in that way, you actually can't let go of the ego because you're giving it too much importance, too much meaning, and believe it or not, too much attention. So instead of seeing the ego in any of those ways, just see it as confusion. When you see it as confusion, it makes it much easier to just ignore it, right? Because you're not interested in confusion. So the first bit of recommendation was to see it as confusion. The second recommendation was do not hate the ego, do not fight it. If you hate the ego or you try to fight the ego, you give it too much energy, too much attention. And that actually enlivens the ego. So don't hate it. Don't fight it. Also, don't be afraid of hearing it in your head. You know, the ego may say something like, oh my God, I'm so sick of her. Don't be afraid of hearing, oh my God, I'm so sick of her. Right? In fact, the next tip is look right at that thought. Oh my God, I'm so sick of her. See that thought as merely the ego voice in the mind, not something you want to believe, not something you want to invest attention in, and let it go. Right? When you're afraid to hear it, oh my God, I'm so sick of her, it's because you believe that's your thought. And right? That's why you're afraid of it. But when you can look right at it, and say, is that a thought I want? Do I really want to feel that way, that I'm sick of her? Is this an experience I want? You know, if you really look at it, you can say, nah, I see it, but I don't want it. I always tell people it's like There's a restaurant here in Pueblo West. It doesn't have this on the menu anymore. They took it off, but they used to have chicken gizzard soup on their menu. And I could look at the menu and I could see chicken gizzard soup. I wasn't afraid of the chicken gizzard soup on the menu. I didn't have to fight against the fact that chicken gizzard soup was on the menu. I just knew I didn't want it. And so I went on until I found something more interesting, right? That's the way it is when these thoughts show up in your mind. They're like chicken gizzard soup on a menu. Oh my God, I'm so sick of her. That's chicken gizzard soup. I don't want that. And you let it go. So I have 3 minutes left. So let's see what I want to say next. As long as you believe your conditioning, you're like a dumb robot. Those are the words I use in the tip. They're pretty strong words, but we're getting to NTI Revelation. It's time for some pretty strong realizations. If you're just believing your mind and doing whatever your mind says, if your mind says, oh my God, I'm sick of her, and you feel very, very sick of her, and you don't want to be around her anymore, you're a dumb robot. And so that's important to look at and to ask yourself, do I want to continue to be that dumb robot that just believes my mind, no matter what it says and feels and acts and reacts based on the mind? Or do I want to have freedom? And that's the day that I shared a couple of poems, one from St. Francis called Wring Out My Clothes, and one from Rabia called This Choir, because I thought those poems really expressed freedom, that the joy. The joy of everything, even Rabia. Rabia was actually a slave. So the joy of being a slave, washing my master's socks, right? That's freedom. She felt joy at everything. So it's something just to consider. Do I want freedom? Do I want to feel that joy and that love? Or do I want to be a dumb robot experiencing whatever my mind is chattering about now? Day 272. That's when we talked about how does your mind interpret. It's kind of important to look at how your mind interprets because it actually interprets with a pattern. And the pattern that your mind is using to interpret the world, there's a few little sentences running in the back of your mind all the time that you might not even see yet. Like, I've got to prove myself. I've got to prove myself. And if that thought is running in the back of your mind all the time, you're interpreting everything through that filter. And whether this is proving yourself worthy or not, right? And you're fighting the world all of the time. And that's just one of many, many examples of the interpretive filters you may have. But it really colors how you see. And NTI recommended a way to interpret, which actually gives the right mind a chance to step in and interpret for you. Shauna went over that for us. Plus, we're going to be going over that again. But briefly, you want to first step back, kind of take a breath, detach from your conditioning. Of course, in order to do that, you have to become familiar with what your conditioning is. Look at the situation as it is. Not as you want it to be. Right? When you look at something in the way you want it to be, you're actually still in your conditioning. So look at it as it is, and then feel intuitively. Feel intuitively. And that's how the right-minded interpretation will come. Just lastly, my last 30 seconds here on today, day 273, the point is that if any being has ever awakened to absolute truth, you can too, because we're all that same I, right? We're all that same I. So if any being has awakened, you can. You just need the commitment, living practice to do it. So Ken is putting the homework assignments in the room. Of course, as you know, you'll have a daily contemplation. There's an optional daily meditation, and then the daily tips. This week we will read NTI 6 days, but tomorrow, day 274, you're actually going to contemplate a commentary, the commentary on love. And then after that, we will be reading from NTI Revelation, one chapter each day. Also, whenever you're supposed to read the Bible, I put the Bible right in the tip or a link to the Bible so you'll have that. And I think Jacqueline is going to be announcing soon, so I'll precede her on this, that the movie of the month for Movie Watchers Group is Little Buddha, which we've seen before, but it's a great movie to watch again when we're going through NTI Revelation. So that will be the movie for Movie Discussion Group this month. I apologize, Shauna, for taking 2 extra minutes, and I am releasing the mic.